She was this gun-toting, whiskey-drinking broad.
The super epic fucking broad.
She was a pioneer in the industry.
She's also so famous and so controversial.
So controversial.
So she's kind of a big fucking deal.
Her story is so incredible.
She belongs on this podcast because she's a broad you should know.
Hello and welcome to Broads You Should Know, the podcast about amazing and noteworthy women from history. I am your host, Sarah Gorski, and I'm here again with Miss Amelia Hamill. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for being back. I love having you back.
It's just such a fun thing to do, to get to know these names and these women, whether we've heard of them or not, and yes, to hear the cool stuff that they did in their lives in a time when they had, you know, very different circumstances than us. Let's just say that.
Very different. And I am, you told me who you're bringing today, and I am like beside myself because I'm obsessed with this woman, even though I don't know very much about her. So I am so excited to learn today.
Same. I really chose her because I wanted to know more about her. And well, that's one of the reasons. The other reason that I chose her is because I feel like she gets overlooked in the genres that she actually created. So yeah. Today we're going to be talking about Mary Shelley.
Yeah! Now,
I know. Most people really only know her, you know, that she wrote Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. But what people don't know is what a huge life she had in a really short amount of time. She died at 53 of a brain tumor.
So young.
So she, you know, a lot of the other women that we've talked about recently have lived into their 80s and, you know, and so she had a brain tumor and she died. Oh. And the things that they found on her writing desk, I found fascinating. So we'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to her death. But the things that they found on her writing desk were really fascinating to me.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. Okay, let's go. Tell me all about her.
Okay, so she actually published quite a few books. The Frankenstein was really just the more famous of them. Mm. And to think about this and to put it in perspective, she wrote it when she was,
wasn't she like 18?
21 years old.
21.
Or it was published when she was 21, I believe.
Yeah, she was really young. I remember that.
Yeah. So she was born in 1797 in London. Ooh. She was the daughter of a philosopher and a political writer by the name of William Godwin and famed feminist Mary Wollstonecraft.
Love it.
She wrote
Love Famed Feminist.
The Vindication of the Rights of Women in 1792.
I have not read that. Have you read that?
I have not. So that's definitely on the to-do list for
also,
sure.
Probably she's a broad we should know. Probably her mom is a broad.
Absolutely. Now, here's the sad part. Shelley never really knew her mom. Her mother died shortly after she was born. And so her father was left to care for her and her half-sister, who was her mother's daughter, from an affair with a soldier.
Ooh.
So this was an older half sibling before she had married Shelley's father. And so he was left to care for them. He remarried because back in those days, that's just what you did.
Yeah.
You know, it's
you had to
like
be married.
Peace out, but I need somebody to take care of my kids and cook my food and what have you.
Exactly.
And so.
Unlike today. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, wait. Completely. No. The family dynamics changed drastically when her father married Mary Jane Claremont in 1801.
Uh-oh, wicked
stepmother. Claremont brought two of her own children in. She had and then she and Godwin later had a son together. But Shelley and her stepmother never got along.
Mm.
Her stepmother decided that her stepsister should be sent away to college and educated, but she didn't see any value in educating Shelley at all.
Oh my
so
God.
She was really the stepchild with the evil stepmother in a lot
really?
Of ways.
Really? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. So that was interesting to me too, you know, because writers, artists, you know, it's always kind of cliche, but a lot of times it is true that we create out of the pain from our pasts.
Mm.
And so she had just kind of a sad life just to start with.
Was she at least like fed? She just wasn't educated?
Or was she like they kept her around. I don't, nothing that I read was like she was beaten or anything. It was just like, you're just from that other woman. I don't want to have anything to do with you.
Mm.
Like, this is my family now. And I've decided.
And your dad just like let it happen?
Yeah, I didn't get the, now he did send her away. Because he, since he was a philosopher, you know, he was in an educated set and so forth. And they had actually really famous people come to dinner, you know, just like come, like Samuel Taylor Coleridge and William Wadsworth. So even though she didn't have the formal education, she did make use of her father's extensive library. So she could be found, you know, she's kind of like almost, it's, you know, when you read this, it almost sounds a little bit like Cinderella.
And she's like a little bookworm, like nobody likes her in her family, like a, so she just reads.
Well, and a lot of times when they couldn't find her, they would find her reading a book at her mother's grave. That was where they would find her as a child.
Doesn't
when
she was heart. Like, that breaks my heart. Know,
she liked to daydream. A lot of people said she, you know, kind of was off in her own world and her imagination a lot of the time. And then, you know, she of course turned to writing as her outlet. So as a child, I scribbled, and my favorite pastime during hours given to me for recreation was to write stories. That's a direct quote. And so she published her first poem in 1807. So those of you doing math out there.
Yeah.
Means she was 10.
10? She published a poem at 10.
I know. Isn't that sweet? So anyway, during the summer of 1812, she went to Scotland to stay with an acquaintance of her father named William Baxter and his family. And that is where she really felt like she was part of a family and and finally saw how everybody else lived.
Yeah.
And she really loved it there because they treated her like family and not like that stepchild that's just kind of in the way. And she really loved that. So she went back year after year. And in 1814, she began a relationship with poet Percy Bysshe. Shelley.
I thought it was Bysshe.
Percy Shelley was a devoted student of her father, and he very quickly became infatuated with Mary. One teensy tiny problem. He was married.
Yeah, he was married.
And he was 15. So he and teenage Mary ran off together and fled to England. Her father did not talk to her again for a very, very long time. Because she broke up with marriage and she did all this crazy stuff and she was 15, you know.
Even though, like, he's the reason they even knew each other? Like,
I mean, but I don't think it was, it's not looked upon as a good thing, I think, ever to steal someone's husband. Like, I can't imagine anybody being like, yay, she stole.
I feel like she was probably not the primary instigator. He made decisions.
Well, I know, but you have to look. And also, and I hate, you know, qualifying pedophilia, but, you know, in those days, it was not uncommon for women of 13 and 14 to get married and 15, you know. I know, it's disgusting, but it was a truce, you know what I mean? I mean,
I gotta remember to take a Tums before we do these episodes. Because, like, immediately when we say that, it's like, oh, my heart.
I know. Little girls not being allowed to be children. But they were madly in love. They were madly in love. They traveled around Europe. They struggled financially and faced the loss of their first child in 1815. Mary delivered a baby girl who only lived for a few days. Then the following summer, the Shelleys were in Switzerland. They hung out with Lord Byron. You know, as you do.
As you do. Just hang out with Lord Byron.
When you hang out with, like, all of these, intellectuals and things back in those days. And one night, the group was entertaining themselves by reading ghost stories. And Lord Byron suggested that they should all try their hat at writing their own horror story. And that is when she wrote Frankenstein. She started writing it when she was 17.
Yeah. Amazing. It's so good. It's such a great novel.
Well, and you also have to think about the fact that, you know, the emotional maturity to write a story where the monster is really the doctor not the monster. You know what I mean?
But that, like, hearing her history, though, like hearing that she would, like, read books at her mother's grave makes all of this seem, like, not quite as absurd. Like,
Absolutely. Well, and you got to think, the woman of the house doesn't like you. And she's not, you know, maybe abusive, but withholding affection is a kind of abuse.
Of course it is.
So she's probably spent a good time, you know, just thinking about death a lot.
Yeah.
And so for somebody who, you know, had already lost a baby, had already lost her mother, to write a story about a doctor who becomes obsessed with bringing people back from the dead, it's not a far stretch.
Mm-mm.
You know,
no, that's like, exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. So that part of it like totally made sense to me.
Was Frankenstein a big hit like right away, or did it take time? Do you know?
I actually don't know. We'll look that up a little bit later because I don't want to speak out of turn, but they called it the modern Prometheus.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, yeah. So, but later that same year, Mary suffered the loss of her half sister, Franny, who committed suicide. Then her lover, seeing as they were not married yet, his wife also committed suicide in that same time period. And so she and Percy were finally allowed to wed in 1816 when she was 19.
That's a lot of suicide.
Yeah. There's just a lot of death in her.
Yeah.
In her. So the fact that she became obsessed with it just.
And that stepsister, the one that got treated well and was allowed to go to school and she wasn't, that's the sister that.
No, this was the sister that was from her mother's affair with I believe. Yeah. So she committed suicide. So did Percy's wife because her husband ran off with a 15-year-old.
I mean,
there is definitely empathy there for her too, for sure.
Yeah. I don't mean to make light of that.
Yeah. Cause she, I mean, I'm sure he left her with a lot of problems and not a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think the money part is always so complicated too. Like, was he still paying like, you know, their version of alimony? Was he still sending money
or not?
Or like,
I doubt it. If you read a lot of those stories, it would be like, you know, the family would take care of them.
Yeah.
Instead of the man. But I didn't read anything specific at that point. She published a travelogue of their escape to Europe, the history of a 6-week tour. And then she was still working on Frankenstein. In 1818, when she was 21, Frankenstein debuted as a new novel from an anonymous author. Many thought that her husband, Percy Shelley, had written it since he had penned the introduction, and the book proved to be a huge success.
Yeah, but it's probably got published because it wasn't, like, a woman's name was on it, it might not have been published, right?
Absolutely. And I'm sure that that's why they did it. There were a lot of women, especially in those times, who would either have a male pen name or they would publish under their husband's name, and then the husband would get all the credit, even though they were writing the books, things like that.
So the fact
that she didn't publish it under his name, but also didn't, you know what I mean? She just said, listen, somebody wrote this. Read it. But that's just a lot to happen in your life by the time that you're 21.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's more than happened to me in my life, for sure.
Now, I know it sounds a little like star-crossed lovers running away together and living happily ever after, but they actually did have not the easiest marriage in the entire universe. It was riddled with adultery and heartache. And
on both sides?
And she lost two more children.
Hmm.
Born in 1819, their son Percy Florence was the only child to live to adulthood.
Wow. Yeah.
Mary's life was rocked with another tragedy in 1822 when her husband drowned. He had been out sailing with friends in the Gulf of Spezia.
Hmm.
Now, you know, we can go into some of her other works, and I would highly encourage people to read her writing because she was very, very talented. Even her other works were very, very interesting. They just never quite hit that level of fame that Frankenstein did. And part of the reason why it did so well is because nobody knew who wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I had said earlier, she died at the age of 53 with only one living child. And she had a brain tumor. And when they were clearing off her desk, what they found were the cremation remains of her husband's heart wrapped in a linen with a poem he wrote for her that she kept with her at all times, and then clippings of hair from each of her children that she had had.
It's goth as hell.
I know.
So her husband's heart ashes?
Yeah, she literally had his heart cremated and like put in a thing.
That's like next level, man.
That is. And she kept them with her at all times.
True.
The hair of her children, you know, three of whom didn't make it. Yeah. And
well, I feel like that was normal. I feel like keeping hair was actually a normal
thing. Yeah, I mean, I found my hair in my baby book not too long ago. And I was just like, ew.
I feel like that was super, super common, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like there's horror movies written about stuff like that. Like,
exactly. But yeah, she like literally had her husband's, or at least a part of his heart.
The heart, that's not normal. Heart ashes.
I think we should bring it back into style. I'm just saying, Sarah. We can
you
start
and I both just need to find
business.
Amazing, amazing lovers that we want to preserve their hearts.
Exactly. This is going to be our new side business. Okay. So we're going to start a heart cremation business where we make your loved one's hearts.
That is so intense.
It is, but it just shows you where her brain kind of always was. You know, there was just death from the second she could remember anything. It was just death, death. People who didn't like her, people who didn't think she was worth anything, runs
well,
off.
Well, there's always a lot of critics, that's for sure.
You know, like, but yeah, so, I mean, in comparison to a lot of the other women, you know, that we talk about, she had a fairly short life, and Frankenstein was really her claim to fame, although she was able to continue her career.
So she kept writing. Did she like, was she able to like make enough of a living off of her writing at least to like be okay? Or was she like destitute?
I don't think she, I never got the impression from anything that I read that they were like destitute, except in the very beginning when he first left his wife.
Was his wife the one? I wonder how the money was with that. Like, if her
I don't see anything here that says anything about it, but I do know that her husband did not disapproved of his son's bohemian lifestyle. I mean, her father-in-law was very opposed to his son's bohemian lifestyle. And so she really devoted herself to promoting her husband's poetry and preserving his place in history, because his family certainly was not running around being like, he's one of us, you know.
Sounds like he didn't fit the model of like the ideal son of the time, right?
Not at all. I mean, especially since, you know, left his wife.
That's like a boatload of like if they're like an upper class family, that's like a lot of shame, right? That's like,
well, and also he was like he was a romantic poet. That's the other thing that I found a little bit more surprising, is that he was not goth in any way. He wrote like romantic poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the darkness really kind of came from her side, but she still loved his. So that was this idea of like her balancing these two very different things. And
so funny, they met when she was so young. How old was he? Did you write that down?
You know what? I know it said it somewhere here, but
I wonder what the age gap was. I mean, just because, you know, we were recently talking about like age gap in the Tolstoys. But it's not that important. It's okay.
We're going to look it up.
Because right, when you're so young, you have like, I feel like you can be molded so easily, you know, like by the person you're with. But she sounds like she really like marched to her own drummer in that way.
So he was born in 1772 and she was born in 1797. So that's a pretty hefty.
97 minus 72?
Yeah, that's a pretty hefty.
So they were 25 years apart. That's a pretty big age difference.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I mean, so she was 15 and he was 40?
That's a big age difference. Yeah.
So, that's interesting. But she loved him, even though their marriage was not perfect, obviously, but she continued after his death to promote his books and make sure that no one forgot that he had been a contributor to the world of literature. So I just found her, I just, you know, it's such a a haunting story, and it really was the beginning of goth. I mean, you can accredit mm-hmm. that one story to starting science fiction, to starting horror, and to starting the more gothic, you know. And I know that Edgar Allan Poe, like I said, and I'm not picking on him, he's a very talented guy too.
Love you, Edgar.
Love you. Let's hang out with some ravens soon. You know, he did some cool stuff, you know, but she really was his precursor. And she, I think she gets more credit nowadays, but I don't know that she got the credit she really, truly deserved at the time.
Well, I mean, a lot of people still think Frankenstein is the name of the monster.
Exactly. Well, that's because nobody's paying attention, or they only watch the Mel Brooks one, maybe? I don't know. Although, even in the Mel Brooks one,
the doctor is Frankenstein,
too. Yeah, he's Frankenstein. But it was Frankenstein's monster.
It's so sad. You know, I don't know if when the last time is you read it. I read it not that long ago, again.
It's been a while, yeah.
It's a really sad. Like, the monster story is very sad. I, like, cry when I read
it. It's very tragic, absolutely. Yeah. But then, once again, that goes along with that parallel in her life, where her life was very tragic and she was very morose and forgotten about and left behind, and nobody cared whether she wanted to learn or not. You know what I mean? So I think that came at least partially out of that. And I just love that Lord Byron is the one who was like, you know what we should do for funsies?
Like, it'll be really fun.
Let's get drunk by the fire and write ghost books. Let's write some. Let's see if we can do it. And then he ends up, you know.
Don't they all end up publishing shit from that night? Though, weren't there, because there were like two other people there besides them, right? And didn't
they
all geniuses?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's see if I can find the part where it tells you.
I feel like I have a friend who wrote a play about that night.
About it was Jane Claremont, Lord Byron, and John Polidori. Hmm. And it was Lord, at least according to this, it was Lord Byron whose idea it was for them all to disperse and write their own horror. I mean, I don't know.
It's just incredible that a parlor game kind of becomes
absolutely. Well, I just envision them like inside on like a rainy day, all like huddled around like a fireplace to stay warm, drinking tea and just reading you know, ghost stories to each other, and then getting in these really intense existential conversations about, you know, life and death.
Yeah, because that's what Frankenstein really is about, like life and what is like intelligent life versus emotional life versus, it's like, that's what, like, it's a crazy deep, and compared to War and Peace, it's like incredibly short. It's like,
yeah, it's not a long book. It's not a long book, but it is about the nature of life and
I feel like it's literally behind me. Here it is. Yeah. It's literally right here on my shelf.
There you go. Put it next to War and Peace that we talked about a little bit last week. There it is.
I've read this one a little more than I've read this one. That's
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But
personally, I'm really excited to always show off the things on my bookshelf because I feel like no one cares but me. So
I care, Sarah. I want to know about all your books.
You're a real pal.
She just, you know, she was fascinating to me. And I knew that she had written it when she was very young, but it was enlightening to me to see that, like, you know, it was because she had kind of a tortured childhood and
And I also like did not know that she was so self-taught. Like, I think I assumed that she, I think I incorrectly assumed that she was the child of like highly educated, and like she was the child of a child.
She was,
educated,
but then her
but
father.
The fact that
didn't...
she was not educated.
I got the impression that maybe her dad did teach her, maybe around the house and stuff, but that the stepmother's decision to not send her for actual schooling, he went with. So,
well. It's on her, because Mary was successful anyway.
Absolutely. And, you know, I hope she, you know, went, stopped by the house one day and was like, na 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 na.
I hope that for her, but it doesn't sound like her style.
So. No. Maybe she left some dead birds on her porch or something. I don't know.
Or like dead bird hearts wrapped in poems.
There you go. I just thought it was, you know, I mean, it was one of the more goth things she did, but, you know, wanting to have his heart with her all the time was...
I'm, like, legit going to be thinking about that a really long time. Like, oh,
well, you've heard of cremation jewelry, right?
Yeah.
They offered it to me when my cat passed away a couple of years ago. And I was like, I love her, but I don't need her ashes, like, around my neck. I'm good.
Very many mixed feelings. Very many. On that note.
On that note. Now
thank
that
you for bringing us everyone. Mary Shelley. What a broad.
I know. Her. So by all means, everybody go, you know, get on your Kindle or your, you know, your tablet and read some.
I'm pretty sure you can read Frankenstein for free in like many places.
Oh, I'm sure you can get it from the library.
And your public library. Let's support our public libraries. Boop.
Absolutely. On your Libby app. So.
All right. Thanks, Amelia. I am so glad you were here. Thank you for sharing Mary with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
To learn more about Mary Shelley, see paintings of her, and some quotes from this episode, head on over to broadsyoushouldknow.com. While you're there, you can click on over to the About page and read more about me and Amelia. Our bios, photos, links to our cool stuff is all right there. Are you following Broads You Should Know on social? We are on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube at Broads You Should Know and Twitter at BYSK Podcast. To suggest a broad, fill out the form on our website or email us at broadsyoushouldknow@gmail.com. If you are a fan of this podcast, I beg you, spread the word about us. Share an episode with your friends or family or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps new listeners to find us. Broads You Should Know is produced by me, Sarah Gorski, and edited by Chloe Sky, with original music by Darren Callahan. Finally, if you were really into the story of Mary Shelley, then I highly suggest you check out a few of our other writer broads. We have Na Ye-suk, the Korean writer and artist and activist, Nancy Dowd, the screenwriter who wrote Slapshot, amongst many others, and of course you should also check out our Italian horror scream queen, Daria Nicolodi. See you next week for another Broad You Should Know.